looking for this light to go.
If it stops.
What is that? It's something, I don't know.
Old soft, old.
Yeah, okay.
You're on.
Okay, it's 6 p.m., so we'll call the Village of Alloway Planning Commission meeting of Monday, January 25th, 2016 to order. That'll be the first change of the agenda, 2016. We'll start with a call to order. Kowalczyk Adrians?
Here.
Hanson?
Here.
Dart?
Here.
Rapp?
Here.
Retzlaff?
Here.
Wheeler?
Here.
And Kornowski is here. Moving on to item number two, modify or adopt the existing agenda. That's the only change that I saw is the correct year. Is there anything else that anybody else would like to?
Move to adopt.
We have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Dart's got you.
Oh.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Agenda. Move forward. Item number three, minutes from November 23rd, 2015. Are there any changes or adjustments anybody wants to make?
I do have a couple of comments. Under the action regarding the petition from Capital Credit Union. Is it on? Okay.
Yeah.
Under the action regarding Capital Credit Union, with respect to the ingress egress easement agreement, I think that is more of a discussion item, since there is a potential dispute that could occur there. Capital Credit Union is presuming to have access to the adjacent property, adjacent private property, for their drive-through traffic to exit. They also are presuming to be able to have access to that property for an egress or an emergency exit from their building. So I just want to make sure that that is clarified in the minutes.
Roger, I don't quite understand what you're asking for.
Well, I thought we had presented that as an action that Capital Credit Union had to take and bring documentation back that there was an easement agreement.
And they have.
They have?
Yes.
Okay. So just wanted to make sure it was clarified as such in the minutes. So.
I think I'm right, Trevor. They have, haven't they?
Correct. Any other areas? If not, I'll entertain a motion to approve. Okay, we have a
motion.
And a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, and then it's carried. Item number four, announcements. Trevor, do you want to kick that off? Or?
Just a few announcements. Capital Credit Union, as we already discussed, brought the easement agreement to the Village Board meeting and was approved back in December. Another announcement, as part of the UW Extension teleconference, we had a teleconference last Wednesday on signs. The next one is scheduled for February 17th from 10:30 to 12. And this is about promoting local protection of wetlands and updates to the shoreline zoning program. And again, we'll be hosting on the Village conference room here. And then the third thing, stormwater permits are typically approved and reviewed by Public Works Committee or Public Works Department, but they're part of our project, development projects. And with the new requirements implemented, it's something that I think we should be more and more aware of. I don't have expertise in this, so I invited Jessica and Genevieve from Foxville Watershed Alliance to kind of just give a brief presentation describing what the new requirements are and how we can meet those. So that's item number 14.
Okay. Any other announcements or from the plan commissioners? Okay. I think we can move forward with the presentation then.
For having me here tonight and look forward to talking with you all about things that I talk about every day. So I'd invite you to stop me throughout the presentation if you have any questions or if you just want to discuss something further that I'm briefly bringing up, okay? Is this good for everyone or I could stand to the side? Do you prefer? Okay, good. Sounds good. I will stay right here. Okay, so I'm Jessica Schultz. I'm the director for the Fox Wolf Watershed Alliance. The Fox Wolf Watershed Alliance is a nonprofit working in the watershed for over two decades on watershed issues, including the development of this TMDL, which we'll get into a little while. The Northeast Wisconsin Stormwater Consortium is a subsidiary of our organization. The Village of Alloway is a member of our Stormwater Consortium, which is 41 communities strong, all working together to meet the DNR stormwater permit regulations. So it's a really neat organization that saves each municipality money by working together on the issues that they can work together on, like public education, developing model ordinances, things like that. So if you have questions about the Stormwater Consortium, Genevieve Vandervelden is the NUSC program coordinator, and we can leave our contact information with you for another time. So tonight we're going to talk about stormwater TMDLs in the watershed. I'm going to just briefly overview the stormwater permit. What does that look like? How does it impact the Village of Alloway? And then understanding total maximum daily loads, TMDLs. So we're going to give a very brief overview of a really complex topic. If you have any questions about the TMDL, please stop me. Then we're going to talk about how does a community meet the TMDL requirements. And then watershed efforts. What's happening outside of Alloway? For this TMDL implementation, because it's not just Alloway that's impacted by this. So going back, 1977, Clean Water Act, the first time we saw rules in the country about what we can do with our water. The Stormwater Discharge Permit was a part of the Clean Water Act. It wasn't until 1988 that stormwater was addressed. Phase one was industrial stormwater permits, and phase two talked about construction permits, but it wasn't until phase three that the municipal stormwater permits came into play, and it wasn't until 2005 that communities in Northeast Wisconsin got a stormwater permit. So I know that Alloway has been talking about stormwater since before 2005, so you are very in advance putting in stormwater ponds and things like that, because you have infrastructure in Alloway that is older than the permit itself. So what is an MS4? Because what we're talking about here is an MS4 permit. MS4 stands for Municipal Separate Storm Sewer System. And that is the any infrastructure that runs under your streets carrying your stormwater out of your city, or it can be the ditch conveyance system if you have ditches yet in Alloway. MS4s are regulated under NR 216. So when we talk about the stormwater permit, even though it came from the Clean Water Act, it is a state of Wisconsin regulation regulated under NR 216. And what this permit requires is municipalities to do nine minimum control measures. And these are standards set by the EPA. So this is not the state of Wisconsin saying you need to do these things. This is the EPA. How the Wisconsin DNR gives the exact details of what a community needs to do is up to the state, but these minimum control measures come directly from the EPA. They include public outreach and education, so teaching your residents what they can do to impact or reduce the amount of stormwater that leaves Alloway or impacts the cleanliness of that stormwater. Public involvement and participation, giving residents things to do like river cleanups or rain barrel workshops or storm drain stenciling, ways that the community can engage in improving the stormwater that leaves your community. Illicit discharge detection and elimination. Only rainwater should be going into your MS4 or into your storm drains. If there's anything besides rainwater going into your MS4, it's the community's responsibility to detect that illicit discharge and correct it. So the Village of Alloway has an illicit discharge detection and elimination program. The construction site pollutant control, so the erosion control factor, what is on a construction site needs to stay on a construction site, the reason why you see silt fence in your community, that's all involved with the stormwater permit. The post-construction stormwater management, you probably deal with this through the Planning Commission, is what needs to happen on a construction, on a new construction site. Does it need a pond at a new facility or a rain garden, or where are they going to divert their stormwater to? So that's all under the post-construction stormwater management part of the stormwater permit. Pollution prevention practices for the municipality. This includes things like salt storage coverage, or if you have a gas fill-up site specifically for the municipal vehicles, that's covered. So all of the potential ways that an illicit discharge could leave city-owned property is covered underneath the pollution prevention practices for the municipality. Storm sewer system maps. When Alloway got its first permit, they needed to map every single storm drain, where it enters or where water can exit the MS4 or enter the MS4 system, as well as where those outlets are in the rivers and the creeks and in the ditches. So there's a very comprehensive map of the MS4 system. The developed urbanized area standard. So there's two at the bottom, developed urbanized area standard and impaired waters. I highlighted the impaired waters blue. The parts of the state that are not under a TMDL have to meet the developed urbanized area standard for their MS4 permit. And right now that's a 20% reduction. You might have known a while back the state set that at 40%, but then that was taken back and it is now at a 20% reduction for both phosphorus and total suspended solids. And we'll talk about those two issues a little bit later on. But the reason why I have the impaired waters in blue, because we have a TMDL in the lower Fox River watershed, we no longer have the developed urbanized area standard apply to us. Now the TMDL applies to us. So what was 20%, you'll see a little bit later, is now much higher. Any questions about the permit requirements?
So this is all about stormwater that's going into the rivers, right?
Yes. Yep, stormwater.
So it doesn't address ground absorption of stormwater into the groundwater.
Yes, no, this is a stormwater permit. So it's the water that is going into the storm drain system or through the ditch system running directly over the surface, leaving Alloway and entering East River or the lower Fox River. What we would like to see more of is the infiltration that you're talking about that would reduce the amount of water coming through, as long as it's not polluted infiltration. So, but this permit addresses the runoff over land.
Okay.
Any other questions about the stormwater permit itself? All right, we're going to dive into how the TMDL impacts the stormwater permit. So TMDL is a total maximum daily load. And I like to think of the TMDL as kind of a pollutant budget. So the lower Fox River has a TMDL for phosphorus and total suspended solids, or sediment, dirt, whatever, however you want to describe. TSS is what the technical term is for total suspended solids. These two pollutants are what we're seeing are causing the fish kills in the bay because of the dissolved oxygen. You may have heard about that last summer and the summer before. The sediment is taking the oxygen out of the bay, so that's the sediment is the problem there. The algae is caused by the phosphorus that we're seeing in the waters. So the two pollutants that we are concerned about for our total maximum daily load are phosphorus and sediment. So what a TMDL does is it examines the whole watershed. It finds where the sources of those two pollutants are coming from, and then sets a budget or a diet for those sources. So we know the handout that you have in front of you here details where the pollutants phosphorus and total suspended solids are coming from for the East River, and then you have another set of charts for the Lower Fox main stem, which are the TMDLs that are in particular interest to the Village of Alloway. Okay, so the TMDL examines where the pollution is coming from, and then it sets a limit or a budget for how much pollution can come from those sources. We'll talk about this a little bit more. But first I want to show you this big map of the Lower Fox River watershed. So when you talk with DNR, they talk about the Lower Fox River watershed having a TMDL. That is true, but what is also true is we don't have one TMDL. The way our TMDL was written, it was by sub-watershed. We actually have 15 TMDLs in the Lower Fox River watershed. The East River and the Lower Fox main stem. Oops, sorry, let me get back. Okay, where is the laser? There we go, sorry. Okay, so the East River right here and the Lower Fox River main stem, which runs the whole length of the Lower Fox River from Lake Winnebago to Lower Green Bay, are the two TMDLs that directly impact the Village of Alloway. So that is why I printed out the information about those TMDLs for you tonight. So you will see that both the East River and the Lower Fox main stem have sources of phosphorus and TSS coming from agriculture, urban areas, construction sites, wastewater treatment plants, both municipal and industrial. So the DNR took what they knew about the watershed, the study that they did, gave everyone a new permit limit that they could give permits to. I'm gonna skip this for a minute. Okay. So for the East River, for the Village of Alloway, stormwater, we talked about how if we were at the state standard, if we didn't have a TMDL, it would be a 20% reduction. Because a TMDL has been developed for our area, we now are held to a higher standard. For total suspended solids, the Village of Alloway needs to meet a 40% reduction for the part of your community that drains to the East River, and a 65.2% reduction for the part of your community that drains to the Lower Fox main stem. The total phosphorus is the same for both the East River and the Lower Fox main stem. We're looking at a 30% reduction instead of that 20% that was needed before. Some communities would consider the Village of Alloway fortunate because some communities in our stormwater consortium are looking at as high as an 85% reduction in phosphorus and total suspended solids. So Alloway actually has lower reductions due to the health of the parts of the watershed that you're in. And also because there is a high agricultural loading coming from the East River watershed. So you will see if you look through this packet that the agricultural reduction is higher, looking at a 70% in some circumstances reduction. Okay, so how does a TMDL affect the Village of Alloway? In two ways. We're talking about the stormwater permit tonight, so we need to meet those stormwater permit regulations. But as you see in this packet, wastewater also has an allocation. So I just wanted to draw this to your attention. When you're thinking about how TMDLs impact your community, it's not just the stormwater, it's also the wastewater. So where your wastewater goes is New Water, the Green Bay Metropolitan Sewerage District, and they also have limits that they need to meet for this TMDL. So you'll see that impact your community as well. So how can you meet your TMDL requirements? Whether it's wastewater or stormwater, We start with looking at what those best management practices are. So the wastewater plant is looking at what would it cost to do a facility upgrade? And I don't know if you follow the news with New Water, but you hear them talking about the high dollar cost that they are looking at for treatment to meet these TMDLs. The same thing can be said in many communities about the best management practices that they are looking at to meet the TMDLs. I'm fortunate to meet with Craig Burnt from the Stormwater Department 2 weeks ago and learned that Alloway is very close to meeting their requirements. They've been planning for many years and building infrastructure as the city has developed or redeveloped, and there isn't too high of a concern for meeting the stormwater regulations at a reasonable cost for the community. So that was good to find out. A lot of communities are not in that same situation. A question that gets asked a lot is, what are the best management practices that we should be putting in to meet these requirements? We're seeing ponds going up everywhere, and why is that happening? Stormwater ponds are one way to meet your stormwater permit requirements. The communities in Northeast Wisconsin, I think, unanimously view them as the best way because they get the most reduction, the most credits from DNR. So modeling has to be done using the SWAT model, S-W-A-T, if you want to look into that. But modeling is done to determine what credits or what reduction pounds of phosphorus and tons of sediment can be done by each different stormwater practice. And stormwater ponds by far have come out to be kind of the heavy hitter, the biggest bang for your buck. But does that mean that's the only practice that's out there to meet these permit requirements? No, we see green infrastructure, green roofs, impervious pavement, rain gardens, biofilters, different types of swales. There are a lot of options that could play into meeting this permit requirement. But again, we're seeing that stormwater ponds offer that the dollar for dollar return that the most stormwater departments are looking for, or most public works departments are looking for. We can talk a little bit more about watershed practices down the line, but I just want to make sure that you also understand that there are other options for meeting permit requirements. Just going to introduce water quality trading and adaptive management. These are new options that the DNR is offering. Instead of the Village of Alloway meeting their permit requirements through developing the infrastructure, the stormwater infrastructure, you could choose to go out and maybe buy credits from a farmer who needs to maybe put on some cover crops or install a buffer strip that would reduce phosphorus and sediment leaving his farm. And then you would get those credits that would then apply to your permit. So some very innovative thinking went into these water quality trading options and adaptive management options. Will all communities use these options? No, especially for a community that's really close to meeting their requirements. But what's nice to know is DNR opened up options to look at the watershed picture instead of just our municipal boundaries for communities that have very high allocations in the TMDL and would be looking at very costly upgrades to their infrastructure in order to meet these new requirements. So before we go, I just want to spend some time talking about watershed efforts in a minute, so you know that it's not just Alloway that's working on meeting TMDL requirements, but there's a whole lot going on in the watershed to improve the water quality of the East River and the Lower Fox and ultimately the Bay of Green Bay. But before we get there, did anyone have any questions about TMDLs, the stormwater permit, and meeting those requirements?
So are all of the permits community-based, or are they also given to major industries or particularly onerous polluters, potential polluters?
That's a really good question. So there are municipal permits. There's also industrial permits for stormwater and wastewater. So the industrial permits for stormwater are for very large facilities. I'm not sure. I wish Craig was here now because he could answer that. Do you know if you have industrial permittees for stormwater?
Not in the village, but isn't
they have their own wastewater permit. You really need a lot of land area to qualify for your own stormwater permit. So how the, let's say you have a Walmart, or what is your biggest facility here in Alloway?
Probably the Bellin.
Okay, so the Bellin. So what? How that would work is they wouldn't have their own permit, but they are responsible to the Public Works Department for managing the stormwater runoff that comes off of their property, especially if they go to do a facility upgrade or make any changes to the pervious area of their building. Then you're going to talk about, you know, those biofilters and rain gardens or potentially their own stormwater pond right on site as their building takes up more pervious pavement or impervious pavement. Then they would be responsible for managing their own stormwater. Good question. Any other? Okay, so just talk a little bit about watershed efforts. There is a lot happening out there in the watershed right now to make sure that we're working towards meeting these TMDL goals. Talked about how NR 216 for the stormwater permit, and then there's also a wastewater permit that really makes the municipal and industrial stakeholders that have permits meet the TMDL allocations. But if there's no way for the state to work in the TMDL allocations into regulations, there's really not a driver for those that show allocations to meet them. So if you, again, look at these loads from the East River and the Lower Fox, you see that agriculture has a loading, wastewater treatment facilities have loadings, urban MS4s have loadings. What we can see about the urban MS4s and the wastewater treatment facilities is they are regulated under the state. So they have regulations that will make them meet these TMDL allocations at some point. Some are more extended timeframes than others. But then we have the agricultural and the urban non-regulated community that the DNR has no way of enforcing this TMDL regulations. So what we don't want to see is that we know where the loadings is, where the phosphorus and the sediment are coming from in your watersheds. For the East River, we know there's a heavy agricultural component. And what can we do to help make sure that we see reductions coming from agriculture so it doesn't ultimately end up on the Village of Alloway's shoulder to fix this problem? There is a lot of movement by producers in the watershed, by farmers, as well as county land and water departments, agronomists, and many others working to develop implementation plans for agriculture as well. So those neighbors upstream from you will eventually do their part to do their reductions so that you have cleaner water flowing through Alloway. You can do your reductions here in Alloway, and we'll ultimately see cleaner Fox River and Green Bay. There are 9 key element plans. The reason why I'm bringing this up is because this may come in front of you someday. A 9 key element plan right now is being done at the county conservation level. The Foxwolf Watershed Alliance is working with the county to develop plans to implement in watersheds agricultural practices to reduce the phosphorus and sediment loading. We have a 9 key element plan for the Upper East River, and that was done in partnership with producers working in the watershed. We're looking at a 9 key element plan for the Lower East River sooner than later, and we would like to have the partnership from the communities that are in the Lower East River as that plan develops. What we want to do is be able to look at the watershed as a whole. What would be best? So the Village of Alloway could meet its stormwater permits with putting a pond here or there, but could we look at wetland restructuring someday and partner on that? Is there different ways that we could meet this TMDL if we work together as a watershed? The really great thing about Alloway, Craig Byrd said, you know, we have this plan. This is the most cost-effective way for us to tell DNR we're moving forward, but our plans are flexible. If we get people that come in and want to be partners, maybe the Nature Conservancy wants to help with some sort of wetland restructuring in the future. This 9 key element plan or the East River Study Group, which we'll talk about in a minute, Or the Lower Fox Green Bay Land Conservation Design, which is part of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Project. Maybe one of these projects will ultimately tie in with the Village of Alloway's stormwater plan and make it look a little bit different than was originally planned. Craig has 2 years yet to submit to DNR what his plan looks like. And most likely the Public Works Department will put forward a plan that includes ponds, majority ponds, to finish meeting that permit requirement. But that plan can change in the future, and I think that is something that especially planning commissions have great interest in, is a variety of stormwater practices. So whether it's rain gardens or biofilters or wetland restoration, that plan can change, but most likely it's going to be submitted as we're doing ponds, because this is a concrete way with minimal maintenance that the Public Works Department can feel comfortable with moving that plan forward. But as these watershed efforts move forward and as partnerships are built in the watershed, that plan may change as years go on. So the 9-key element plan may be something that comes, and Alloway may be asked to be a part of that. The Demonstration Farm Network, just so you know, is a network of farms that are teaching farmers about how to reduce phosphorus and sediment. So we have our stormwater consortium that MS4s learn from each other on what's the best ways to reduce phosphorus and sediment. Greenville is doing a test rain garden program in their terraces. You better believe if that's a successful program, that that's going to spread throughout our region, because Greenville is going to tell Green Bay and Appleton and Alloway about how that program worked through the Stormwater Consortium. This Demonstration Farm Network is the same type of thing. Farmers are getting together and learning from each other what practices work and if they're economical. The East River Study Group, just wanted to bring to your attention, there are a group of researchers that are examining closely the East River and what's a potential way to work as a watershed to impact or reduce flooding as well as impact water quality. So that may be a group that comes to your village at one point to ask for cooperation. Same thing, the Lower Fox Green Bay Land Conservation Design is a group being led by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife. And they may also come knocking someday and ask for your partnership. Finally, the Silver Creek Adaptive Management Project is a project being led by New Water, the Green Bay Metropolitan Sewerage District. They are looking at an alternate compliance option where instead of upgrading their facility, they go out and kind of adopt a watershed and do everything that's necessary in that watershed to meet the water quality criteria. If they do that and are successful meeting the water quality criteria, DNR will say you've met your permit requirements. So a really interesting way, kind of adopt a watershed type permit. So we're watching that closely, and that may be something that Alloway is involved in, whether it's actually in a sub-watershed that Alloway is in, or potentially because your wastewater goes there. On some level, your community may be part of that someday. And that is all I have. Does anyone have any questions about anything that I talked about tonight?
Yeah. Okay, so you have the percent reductions or the amount that needs to be reduced for the Lower Fox River and the East River. So if this were in both, is it a combination of those two numbers, or is there some overlap there where it's...
That's a really good question. So you are in two sub-watersheds. So the Village of Alloway is responsible for meeting the reductions for the Lower Fox River, for the part of your community that drains to the Lower Fox River. So Craig will be developing a plan for the part of your community that drains to the Lower Fox River and developing a separate plan for the part of your community that drains to the East River. You're responsible for meeting both on the land area that drains to that watershed.
So if you see these numbers, that percent reduction is for that part of the village and then the other percent reduction.
Correct. So, and Craig even said it may be more. It's going to be more difficult to meet the TSS requirements for the Lower Fox River. I think that was the 65% reduction. And so, we talked a little bit about water quality trading. There are some possibilities that a community can trade within itself. So, this is where it gets a little complicated. If you can do a lot more reduction for the East River, then the DNR may let you do less reduction for the lower Fox River. But this may also be a place where we could partner on some watershed-type projects, or the community may look to you to see if you have any ideas for green infrastructure projects on that lower East River side, lower Fox River side of your community, because that would help them, that would help the Public Works Department meet that permit requirement. But if you can't do that, then my guess is that Alloway would actually enter a trade within itself and do more work on the East River side and take credit for that on the lower Fox River side.
So there are towns as opposed to that are not part of the urbanized areas that also are affecting the water quality. Are those presumed to be agricultural lands, or I guess how are they held to account also?
That's a really good question. So there are some townships that are smaller than the... So a general rule of thumb is a community of 10,000 or more in population has a stormwater permit. But there are townships that are smaller than 10,000 that have a stormwater permit. There are also many townships that are smaller than 10,000 that do not have a stormwater permit. And that would be classified in this document as a urbanized, non-permitted community. So there is a allocation for phosphorus and sediment to urbanized, non-permitted communities separate from agriculture. So there's an agricultural loading and there's an urban non-permitted loading. And there is no way, just like for agriculture, there's no kind of teeth behind that loading. That will come to most likely a watershed collaborative project. If we start doing nine key element plans, we'll include those communities in the nine key element plans, make recommendations for how they should work towards meeting their permit requirements, and then most likely look for funding to help make that happen. So right now, the Fox Hope Watershed Alliance has a grant from the EPA to install practices in the Plum and Kinkapok Creek watersheds, which is near Kaukauna, for agricultural practices. Once we develop nine key element plans that take some of those urbanized communities, whether they're permitted or not permitted, then there may be funding that opens up for urban stormwater practices. And most likely we would help to look for those communities that don't have the permit requirements, that they would want to seek the funding themselves. Organizations like ours or Nature Conservancy or others working in the watershed may then look for that funding and help those communities make that happen.
And where could we go to look for best practices with respect to community planning to meet the requirements?
DNR's website is a great resource, so I gave you two handouts from their website on TMDL. They also have a whole section on stormwater permits and ways for communities to meet those permits. If there are specific practices that you're looking for, our organization would be happy to send information about those practices that we have available your way. I just want to thank you again for your time. And if there are any questions in the future, myself or Genevieve, who's sitting right there, would be happy to talk with the group again or individually. So we'll leave some cards at the table. Also, just if you have any interest in agricultural TMDL implementation, I'm leaving some copies of the Basin Buzz, which talks about different practices that are happening in agriculture. This is a newsletter that we're sending out twice a year to producers in the watershed.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, again, thank you, Jessica. That was great. I guess we can move on to item number 5, public appearances. If there's anybody from the public that'd like to come up and talk, please step up to the podium and state your name and address, and certainly address the commission.
Good Jim O'Rourke, 2339 Oakwood Avenue. I'm with the on the ad hoc committee for the Alloway Bike Ped Committee. I'm the co-chair in charge of walkers or pedestrian support. I'm here to talk about the pedestrian refuge island that is proposed for in front of the Town and Country Supper Club site, which is on the agenda for the next item. So I have a package here that I presented to the Bike Ped Committee, and we made a motion to support connecting the different neighborhoods with this proposal. So I'm going to pass this out to you. We'll be ready.
It's the same one that I got. Gotcha.
I'll be trying to be brief and just hit the bullet points. The package I gave to you is about 15 pages long. It has maps from the Wisconsin Department of Transportation indicating where the proposed pedestrian refuge island is. And I've been working on this for a number of years. I've been on the Bike Ped Committee for about 4 years. Attended all of the State Highway 57 meetings, and the overall concern was the ability for neighborhoods adjacent to Riverside Drive to be able to get across Riverside Drive to the Fox River Trail, and then also under the Complete Streets program, which is traditional neighborhood design, we wanted to have isolated cul-de-sacs and neighborhoods connected through a variety of means, and one way would be to connect them through abandoned or no longer used watershed creeks. And we happen to have one here that the village already owns the land, and so this would be the easiest step to move forward with it. So what I gave you was what's called the Town and Country PUD, or Plan District Development Pedestrian Refuge Island Sidewalk and Trail Connection Proposal. The first proposal that I have, if you flip the page over to page number 2, there's the map, is a 20-foot perpetual easement running adjacent to the rear property line, and then to the north property line that would connect St. Mary's Boulevard with the existing lot that the village owns for stormwaters, which is a, I believe, a 30-foot lot, and then it would take it all the way to the proposed pedestrian island, which is going to be one of only a handful of safe crossings on Riverside Drive, Highway 57. So that blue line would connect that particular neighborhood to the pedestrian island. One of the other suggestions that I have for this site is to have common parking. The state DOT wants to take away some of the land in front of the adjacent property owner here, and she's afraid that she's going to lose her parking spaces. As long as the village owns the land right now, this would be the time to look at possibly doing a land swap, taking her her parking spaces on the side and moving it around to the from the front and moving it around to this side. So that's something that I'm not asking you to evaluate it tonight, but look at it for your next meeting. The watershed walking trail is what I included in there, connects what's called Doty Creek, which is one of the oldest, it's the oldest American executive mansion in the state, was located on that site. Judge Doty, 200 years ago, built what's called the Indian Agency House, and he built his mansion there. And that is on the Sky Building site. And that creek bed ran from our stormwater detention pond that we just rebuilt up along the Sky Building, across the road, and behind this particular parcel and into Sunlight Park. So I have tracked down that particular watershed, and it's a continuous watershed that is historically significant, and it makes it easy to connect Sunlight Park with the Town and Country Golf Club that has now been fully developed, and the golf course is no longer there, but that has been developed, and this connects those two neighborhoods. The Town and Country Golf Course neighborhood is isolated because of some original obsolete planning, and so you have some a couple cul-de-sacs in there that don't have access to get down to the Fox River Trail. The traditional neighborhood design, which was approved by this committee and is part of the comprehensive plan, includes connecting neighborhoods through the Complete Streets program. The historic sites in Section 106 study, because it was a historic property, we're required to document all of the Section 106 historic properties, and that should have been done as part of the Highway 57. The profits, we're going to make about a $90,000 profit on the sale of this property if it goes through. We bought it for about $55,000. We're going to sell it for $150,000. That $90,000 profit, I believe, should be put towards finishing the corridor study that was done by Grave, as well as putting in appropriate trails and walking facilities that will connect the properties with what we call pedestrian loops. The bike ped committee did make a resolution to embrace the concept of the pedestrian loops and to ask the village to look at including ways to connect the different communities with this particular proposal. We didn't ask the village to do anything specific. We asked you simply to look at it and come up with a plan that simply made sense. I did include the information package for everybody. Thank you very much.
Jim, was there a document besides this document that shows the motion was made by the Bike Ped Committee or anything like that? Or is that inside there somewhere? Or is there minutes?
The minutes aren't completed yet.
Okay.
So Trevor has a draft of the minutes, but there was a motion.
Okay.
And was accepted. Roger was there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, it was. Yeah.
Okay, anybody else from the public like to come up? Sure.
I'm Becky Nyberg and I live at 214 Simonette Street, and I am also on the Bicycle and Pedestrian Committee. And it's kind of hard to come and make comment before we hear what's happening afterwards. And so if I'm saying something that, you know, out of place for what's happening with this permit, you know, for the property, then, you know, let me know that. But it's hard not having that discussion and then being able to make comments just come forward first. But I'm a little concerned because I started working with Alloway Walks and Bikes in 2004, so it's been more than 12 years. And the first meeting that we had was at the Mariner Hotel, and one of the things we tried to do was that we said we need to improve walking and bicycling alleyway, and we sent groups of people out to try to cross the road. I invited, you know, everybody I knew, and that was the first meeting, and they came back alive and all went, holy smokes, you're right, it's really hard to cross the road. And so we've been working for 12 years on trying to get those things done, and I want to make sure that when the village has the opportunity of, like, this property coming up for sale and becoming village property, that they're looking at what's in the plan, what's ahead. The Riverside Drive is going to be redone, that there is property that the DOT is going to need, and it would make sense for the village to make that transfer before so that the new property owners know what's going on and know what they're getting and have that. Say, okay, there's going to be a sidewalk in front of here, they're going to need this land, the next door neighbor needs this property. So I don't know what happened, and if it did, that it did fall through the cracks, but I would hope that when the Planning Commission is looking at the different PPDs and that they're looking at what are in the plans and what's happening in the future and how can we do it at the most reasonable cost and make the most sense. Because once you sell that land, that owner has control of it, then later on they're going to have to wrestle with the DOT or whoever else comes through, and it's just going to slow the things down. And so it was just brought up at our Bicycle and Pedestrian Committee meeting, and we were kind of like, huh, they didn't do that, or we don't know. And so I would just hope that the correct different, you know, committees are looking at things like the bicycle and pedestrian plan when they're doing the PPDs and that they're, you know, keeping track of all that. So that's just because we, I've been beating this drum for a long time, and I just would hope that you'd see that we've got a lot of people involved in it, and it's not just me, that those things are done, because I really think that in the future, that's what we need to attract younger people to live in the village. We've got a, we're positioned in a very good place, close to Green Bay, close to De Pere, close to where jobs are. But if we can't be getting people around without having to have two cars in every garage, we're going to be losing out because people just can't afford to do it, and they don't want to do it for a lot of reasons. And we're going to be losing out on trying to resell the property we have now and getting the top dollar for it. And we all live here, and that's what we want. You know, I want, and it's not going to be another old person buying my house when I sell it, and, you know, another almost retired couple. It's going to be young people with kids, and they want to be able to, their kids to walk to school. They want to have one car between two people or none. And those are the kind of things that, we need to be looking at the future for the village. So, thank you.
Anybody else? Okay. We'll move on from public appearances to item number six, action regarding preliminary approval of petition from Mayflower Greenhouse, Inc., requesting plan development district on parcels AL-125-7 and AL-125-8, located at 3245 and 3241 Riverside Drive. And I believe that petitioner was going to make a quick presentation or a quick overview.
Sure. Can you, Trevor?
Yeah.
There is a little PowerPoint that that I presented to the village board a couple weeks ago. And just so you get a kind of an understanding of what's going on, I'll show you that real quick. Forward. Good, great. This is a picture of our West Side store. I saw one question in an email about the iron gates. No, there won't be any gates at or fencing along Riverside Drive as it planned at all. Let's see. Well, I'm missing one here. This is a proposed building. This is originally drawn up. We were on a different site that was so that the west and south elevations aren't correct here. This was originally done for a different site, but we're going to go forward with this building plan. The center is a glass greenhouse frame with stick-built ends. Let me see if I can get this laser. These, at this point with the architect, were on a metal roof, and this would probably be board and batten, or perhaps a barn wood, if we could find a consistent barn wood exterior. So this is basically what the building would look like that's facing Riverside Drive. So let me go back here one. So this is kind of a dark picture, but facing Riverside, we would have a pretty consistent plant display out front. Okay, so it's really going to beautify Riverside Drive as a drive-by attraction, if that makes any sense. Okay. Oh, here, example. Here would be just, these are fall plants. This is just an example of kind of what the front of our greenhouse presently looks like in September, let's say. Riverside Drive would give us a much-needed location over on the east side. This would be a retail outlet, and we do a lot of classes that we'd be using this for. We'd be closer to town. We'd be closer to a lot of people, and a lot of our classes are during the winter, and there's the travel out all the way past the airport to our present location. We'd like to do a lot of our present classes on the east side. There is going to be a big emphasis on hard goods. So it will not only include just garden hard goods. We'll be doing like interesting furniture and that sort of interior as well as exterior hard goods. This will not be a production facility. The production will all happen on the west side. Just so you understand that. We're going to make a $500,000 in improvements on this property and add a beautification element to Riverside Drive and the new corridor that hopefully you're looking for. We also are hiring Alloway residents as manager and clerks, and we already have a manager in place, and we know the clerks that we'd like to have. If this all develops and you approve us, we'll be basically all Alloway residents there. I live in Alloway myself, too. Just some examples. Here we do workshops. We do all the years one frame plant art workshop that we do. We have a fall decor. We integrate found objects and flea market stuff to use as here's an example. We do a big holiday wreath and decorating workshops. We do a number of those in December. This is getting to be a really popular thing. We'd be doing this on the east side also. There you go. Our east side manager has decades of experience in primary education. He'd like to do some family-oriented classes and continue with what we've been doing on the west side. Planning and design workshops for every season and occasion. Eastside Mayflower will feature the work of regional artists and craftspeople, gardeners, fire arts and crafts, soaps and giftware. We already have a number of these people that we use on the west side, and there's a few more other avenues that we'd like to explore as far as hard goods. We are going to have a coffee and tea bar, so when we get back to the bicyclists and the pedestrians, we're pro bicycling and pedestrians because hopefully that will encourage people to frequent our establishment. And there's possibilities with the daycare and we do buses too. We do Door County, we do botanical buses to Chicago, etc. So there's a possibility that we could partner with them on some things. Here is the ownership and management. It's me. I grew up on St. Mary's and currently live on Warren Court and own a property on St. Mary's Boulevard. Pete is going to be our primary manager. He lives on Mission. Kim is actually my wife, who's going to be a designer, and John is my business partner. Grew up in Alloway, and he has family members that live here in Alloway also. Summation, we run a fantastic design greenhouse and are your neighbors and friends, and we can add beauty and cachet to the new development of this new corridor. We believe we are a perfect fit for the vision of the future of the street and development, and look forward to being on Riverside and in Alloway. So that's it.
Thank you very much.
So that's just an overview, if anybody needed an overview. So I'm here to answer questions. We submitted our paperwork, and I know that there are some questions for me. I will tell you that I'm not a seasoned developer by any stretch of the imagination, but I do have professionals that I have under my employ. So hopefully we can satisfy anything you want to.
This page right here, this is the one that mostly reflects what it's going to look like.
Right. Except the building that you saw on there will be the building. So these are glass and plastic covered greenhouses. So it won't look like that. The building will look different, but this will be what the street view will be. Okay. Now, there was a question about parking in front. And there's enough. This is a two-acre property. So our parking plans, and I will have to sort of burrow that down further and give you exactly the number of parking spots, because I don't have that right now. But at Riverside, there are two curb cuts on this property. So it'd be perfect for in and out driving. There will be cars in front, driving in front. At least that's the plan. But I don't intend on having parking in front of the building. That'll be on the sides. Okay? Just so you understand that. I don't think I addressed that in the effect analysis report.
And what are your feelings on an easement of that property in the back for sidewalks?
Well, I haven't really had enough time to consider that.
It's true.
And I did, Trevor and I talked about it just briefly this last week, this last week. And he wanted me to think about that and see where that goes. Depending on what the village decides, we'd be glad to talk about that. Now, there's also the, wouldn't there be sidewalks on Riverside itself too, in the upcoming plans? Correct.
I'm not absolutely positive if there would be sidewalks there. There would be Riverside.
The DOT is currently showing sidewalks in the front of.
Right. Okay. So that's understood. At least I knew that was in the plan.
Okay. I the proposal that Mr. O'Rourke has brought forward is an interesting thing and something that I wouldn't mind taking a look at, but it's kind of like plopped on top of what was already going ahead, and it makes it a little bit touchy and confusing and hard to get anywhere.
Right.
With that proposal and the timeline that we're looking at. But if we could think of a way to get some easements in there so we could think about that in the future, but just give us some room to work on that. I don't know if that's even a possibility. Is it a possibility for you, Chris?
Possibly.
Actually, there are already easements on the east side of the property. There's a drainage easement they will not be allowed to build or pave. There's also this pavement easement on the north property line, some sort of access easement. I'm not sure why it's there, but that's also something that the developer will not have an opportunity to use. Unless these easements are changed for some reason.
I believe that that pavement easement is just north of the daycare. This CSM actually was done in 2002.
Yes.
And because of the strict time constraints, that's why we're using it. But so that's actually a parking agreement easement between the daycare and I believe it's at the
Well, and where's the daycare?
The daycare is actually not shown on the CSM.
That lot 3
but
is the daycare lot?
It's lot 3.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And lot 1 and 2?
So this is only for lots 1 and 2?
Correct.
Okay. So that parking access easement is there, though, correct? Does exist?
As far as I know, yes.
Okay. And the watershed easement, or the, it's a utility easement, I believe, goes behind both buildings so that, actually all four properties shown, correct?
That's correct.
So we could examine, this entire area, a pedestrian access route through this that could possibly be, you know, something that could be developed between the residential properties too that connect the neighborhood that is now kind of isolated over there from the park. Correct? I'm just wondering.
Yeah, that's a possibility, yeah.
Okay. So part of the reason for that is that in the newly approved Parks and Rec plan, this utility easement extends to the south, and that segment is shown in the Parks and Rec plan as being included in a neighborhood park for that area of residential, and they have a walkway proposed through that segment up to the property line, the south property line of this.
I believe that scenario was only connecting the easement between St. Mary's and Arrowhead. So they would connect.
It didn't come this far?
Sunlight, no.
So, but could it come this far? Could it be extended?
Potentially. I mean, it's a possibility. It's probably worth mentioning that as part of the offer of purchase, the village is not selling off the back triangle on the property. Mm-hmm. I believe their intentions would be to then see if the neighboring residential property owner who already is maintaining a portion of that triangle would want to take possession of that piece. I mean, I could just...
That's what I
recall,
yes.
Okay, well, I think the main issue is here is we don't have really a bicycle or, let's say, just a pedestrian connectivity plan for the community. And that's what we're working on now. So what we're trying to do, I think, is, at least the sense I get, is make some provision for connectivity where it doesn't exist right now, and to ideally preserve some pedestrian routes between neighborhoods that children could use without having to get out on a main highway to get to a park. So I think that's a planning exercise that we should be engaging in before we go ahead with this PDD, just to look at what the overall neighborhood impact is and what could be done with easements that are already in place.
I think, though, that we need to be sensitive to the original intent of the easement, too, and the property mm-hmm. owner's rights to have not necessarily have a trail in their backyard where they maybe initially
True.
Intended that was a drainage easement, and now we're sending pedestrians through there. I don't know that that's necessarily a fair thing to do. Just because we have the authority over that easement, we don't necessarily have the authority to use the easement for anything we want. So we just need to be sensitive.
Well, it's
to
not
that.
I'm not necessarily proposing that because we haven't gotten to a pedestrian plan. What I'm looking for is an opportunity to preserve the easement, you know, through the neighborhoods where we already know connectivity doesn't exist.
Sure.
Okay. So we know there's a problem. Why would we go ahead and make a decision that preserves the problem?
Is there a plan to extend sidewalk on St. Mary's?
That is something we looked at discussing because as part of the bike and pedestrian plan, we're looking at east-west connections. Preliminarily, I think St. Mary's is the best bet for that. That's without any engineering background or analyzing it really in-depthly. But St. Mary's has the widest right-of-way between Arrowhead and Rose Line. So I think a sidewalk on St. Mary's would probably be, you know, from my perspective, the best solution. But again, the engineers have to do the work too. So.
Okay.
Trevor, I had a question about the CSM. This is a 2002. Are we going to call for an updated CSM?
Yes.
I read here that it was one of the action items was to have that.
Yes, and we would likely combine the two mm-hmm. the two lots, lot one and lot two, mm-hmm. And then section out that triangle in the back.
And is there something that describes sectioning off this triangle? It's not really described.
It's kind of material. It's indicated in. Well, it's not in the map, but. Right.
It is a contingency in the current sale.
Okay, we haven't been given privilege to view the sale agreements. So.
That was another quick question I had. Is the sale final? You own the property?
Not yet.
Not yet?
No.
And you were intending to go forward with plans for construction in February, which is coming up in a week.
Well, we would like to get
and
to
we're at the beginning of the process.
Right. So we're very close, and I was going to sit down and talk to these guys and get to a point this week. So, but there is also the if all of a sudden we were like, no, you can't do this, then owning the property would be sort of.
Yeah, and that's what.
It's kind of a.
Oh, yeah.
Well, are you going to let us do this? Then we'll. It's sort of like that right now.
Wanted to get that out.
Right.
So we knew because I understand our.
Right.
Objective is to say it's worth going forward with.
Right. So if we get preliminary approval, then we move into that stage. Yeah. So
okay,
this is kind of a key meeting and.
Don't we normally have a much more developed site plan, even for preliminary approval?
This actually meets all the requirements in our ordinances.
It does?
Just a little background as far as why we're going through the PDP process versus site plan review. Because this property is currently zoned correctly for Chris's intended use. But it was the village decision as part of the offer of purchase to go through the PDP process. Guarantee that we do get the development that was proposed and in the village board meeting, but also to give enough opportunity for public input as well. Because obviously this provides two more public meetings as opposed to the site plan review that only offers two. Being that this is zoned correctly, and this would typically go through a site plan review. I didn't think that the plans need to be as strict.
We don't know. We need to see what the parking counts are going to be, and we also
the preliminary approval is basically approving this development concept. The final approval is more specifics like parking. And that sort of thing, stuff that you would normally improve through the review.
So we'll be seeing this again. We'll be seeing this will come back to us then once you
yes.
do what you need
yes,
to do to answer staff's
I
questions
have to be
and
honest.
To consummate the sale.
We were up against some pretty quick deadlines.
Oh, yeah.
And I would have loved to supply
yeah.
a full site plan, but to be honest, I didn't have enough time to put all that together. And we're working on that right now, and we will furnish those to you as soon as they're available. So it's a kind of a big week for us this week. So
you mentioned that you do these classes.
Yes.
How many people do you normally have in your classes?
Anywhere from 25 to our biggest classes are usually around 50 people.
Okay. Do you do these classes outdoors?
No, we do them. They're usually indoors.
Okay.
Yes. And they're usually hands-on classes. A lot of them are planning classes. A lot of them are design classes. They can come in to do a container or do a frame or do work with succulents or do terrariums. Or it's a number. We have a lot of different classes. So they're all pretty plant-centric and planting. But we do have the holiday classes. We do have the wreath-making classes. And so, yeah, I could come up with a whole list if you'd like to see them. I do. I could.
Well, it's more a question of what, how many people, how much activity there's
right.
going to be.
Right.
You're backed up to residential properties,
yes.
So will there be a disturbance to the residential
right.
properties?
Right, and I understand that. I really do.
And with the refreshments that you mentioned, are those refreshments for sale?
No.
Okay.
No.
Free. Okay.
I have a question which might be more for Trevor, but it's the description talks about the site having two driveway connections for Riverside Drive, but in the staff comments, one of the public works department comments says that access to Riverside must be obtained from WISDOT. So they have driveway, but they need to get a permit for it, or if they don't have a driveway, and what's the likelihood of getting a driveway?
There's two existing curb cuts on that property. Speaking with Craig, our public works director, they might just have to re-solidify that they can use it.
Okay, so there's probably not a question of whether or not they would be able to have access to
right.
the Riverside. Okay.
And there wouldn't be a question then that they'd be able to use both curb cuts, so one in and out kind of better than, because that was one of your points was
right.
You had separate driveways for ingress and egress, and as long as that's not a... If we're going to see this again, maybe another question. What are you going to do with those big the lighting standards that look like they have basketball goals?
Well, I'm going to have to look at those. I drive by and I look at them.
I didn't see the property with the building on it.
I sort of addressed those in the analysis because they are... I presume they're still existing from the parking lot of Town & Country Restaurant. So I would have to get it would be in our plans, if it's appropriate, to have parking lot lighting. And if we could salvage any of the electrical in those, then yes, we would probably employ some of, I'd probably replace the posts themselves and the lights. But if the existing electrical worked, then we would probably employ those as a parking lot.
Just curious.
Now, how that's going to affect those first, especially the first two houses on St. Mary with the backyards butting up to us, that would be something I'd be very sensitive to. And at night, we would dim those down. But I would work with you on whatever would be appropriate to that. Presently, we have lights on the west side. We have lights that light up that are attached to the greenhouse itself. That a certain darkness sets them off, and then there are lights all night. And that seems to work pretty well for us out there. We don't do, other than the classes during the winter, that are anytime 6 to 7 o'clock starts, usually around 6, 6.30. We don't have a lot of business hours that are actually when it's dark. Because in the summer, we'll stay open until later in the day. But it's always light until we're closing. So... A little bit in the winter, but during the summer it wouldn't be an issue at all.
Will you have loudspeakers broadcasting announcements or paging personnel on the site?
Not outside, we wouldn't.
Okay.
We do play music, and occasionally the system we have on the west side is we can override it with a microphone for, like, classes. But the funny thing is we hardly ever use that. Occasionally we do, with a big class, but no, we don't have outside speakers that are going to be interfering with
I'm concerned about the neighboring residents.
Yes, and I, so. and, I grew up on St. Mary's, and I remember, I mean, when I grew up, the golf course was there. And I remember Town and Country as a restaurant. And I actually knew one of my best friends on the street lived in that house, one up from Riverside. Eric Martin did. And I remember them and asking them, is this restaurant really create much of a problem for you? So, and how long has it been since Town and Country has been closed? It's been a long time. I can't even, do you know?
Probably 1994, 95.
Really? Okay. So it's been a long time for those residents to have nothing behind them except an empty lot. I surely don't intend on causing them any troubles at all. I'll do whatever I can to make it as comfortable for them as possible.
So it sounds like going forward we're looking for a sidewalk solution of some sort, and that's being discussed by Trevor and with Chris and Brad. So I don't know if there's much more that we can discuss about that tonight rather than talk about the principle of the project and then move forward how we feel we should based on the principle of the project.
Well, I don't know if it's a sidewalk solution. I think that as a planning body, we should look at the neighborhoods associated with this development. We already have some easements in place and determine, but there seems to be this agreement to offer a portion of this property to a residential owner. But I don't know if that's received any kind of public airing. I think just to look at what's the potential down the road, homes sell at a certain time. Any of these residences could sell in the next year, 1 year to 10 years, who knows. But if we have the opportunity to preserve a connectivity route that doesn't exist right now, I think we should examine the potential for that to be a valuable feature for the community. So, and if we can get the buy-in of the developer, that'd be great. I'm not trying to impose anything. I just think it's something we should look at as a community, and it's really our job to keep our eyes out for those things.
Just talk a little bit about that corner piece. It has not been offered to anybody, and majority of it falls within the already existing easement. There's just a small portion that's not in that easement.
And I don't know how much we want to discuss some of the negotiations that are taking place tonight. So how would you recommend we proceed with a motion? Is it a motion?
I would say that I would move that. I think it's preliminary. Recommend preliminary approval. Recommend to the village board that they preliminarily approve the project with the condition that our planning and zoning administrator and other village staff examine the adjoining neighborhoods to see what sort of pedestrian connectivity could be preserved for future development. Should it become advantageous based on the fact that we already have distinct easements through the properties.
I understand. I think we're on the same page then.
Okay.
Unless there's any other comments.
Okay.
We have a motion. We have a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the motion carries. If you remember what that was, is approval. Continue to work with Brad and Trevor. And
I will.
Come up with some.
It's been a pleasure. These guys are fantastic.
Perfect. It's good to hear.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's a great project. Yeah, I think it's going to be great. Item number 7, action regarding recodification project.
All right, for this one, I'm actually going to head up to the podium. Discussed at previous meetings, General Code has been looking at our ordinances and kind of updating some irregularities or inconsistencies that have come about over the years through amendments and different statutes have changed. I was asked that I provide the sort of no-brainer or take out some of the no-brainer questions, and so that's what I did. There's quite a few of them, actually. And I left in the ones that, you know, could be decided either way or they were worth mentioning, I think. The first one, for instance, talks about amendments to a State Department that no longer exists, and also a child daycare center that serves nine or more as part of something that no longer exists either. A recommendation by them and staff recommendation would be to revise the reference as follows: to delete the whole phrase and replace with daycare centers. Again, just so you know, daycare centers in our ordinance is defined as a place with four or more children under seven for less than 24 hours, and it requires a license. So it's actually, it falls within that same parameter.
This might not be relevant, but does daycare include adult daycare?
Not as defined in our ordinance, no.
So if you would just put the word daycare in there, how do we know it excludes adult daycare?
Maybe assisted living?
It'd be assisted living, or it would be, I think the state might define it as adult homes.
So they don't call it adult daycare? Like you can take your mom somewhere so they take care of her while you're at work?
They might. I'm not going to, I guess we could ask Dennis about that, but power ordinance defines it.
Yeah, we have a definition in our ordinance, though, as kids.
Kids under seven.
Oh, so we have the definition.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Daycare.
Yes,
okay.
Four more children
so okay.
Under 7
got it.
Years of age. Moving on to the next question. This was, I thought, just interesting because this was a problem we ran into when we were talking about rezoning the pump house last year already, and how we don't have anything in our ordinance that allows for mixed use or the type of facility that the gentleman was interested in putting in that building. So this addresses that. It basically redirects the person, the reader, to the correct part of our ordinance. So we used to have something in there, but then it was deleted and the language was never modified. So now it directs us to the exact conditional use section in our zoning code. The third one, this one is interesting, and I'll definitely solicit any input. Within our high-rise section, that's our zoning that allows for apartments in hotels, motels, that sort of thing. There's this weird shall provide one space to parking spaces. Pretty interesting. I'm not really sure the author of the ordinance what direction they're going for. General Code provided two examples: shall provide two parking spaces, or shall provide one parking space. To clarify, in our high density, another zoning classification that allows for apartments, it requires two, one covered, one uncovered. So I don't know if we want to say revise and shall provide two parking spaces, one covered, one uncovered, kind of follow a similar language, or if we just kind of want to leave it open, or if we want to get more complex than that and say with apartment buildings, provide one covered, one uncovered, hotels, motels, and all their uses under high-rise.
Can we let, in that situation, the market forces determine how many parking spaces are required and just go with the minimum? Since we have a goal for, you know, what was this presentation he had? Total maximum daily load. That has to do with, you know, land area coverage by impervious surface. The more we can do to allow for absorptive land area would increase our chances of getting towards that that permit target. And I think most developers will know how many parking spaces they will need for their project to be developable. So it would make sense to just have one as the requirement.
I agree with that. If you're going to build an apartment complex, you're going to know how many spots you need in order to be able to sell it. So,
yeah. So do you want to, okay, actually, the whole sentence, apartment buildings or multiple family dwellings contained within and under the cover of said building, so you just want to leave it as one parking space?
That statement under cover of said building implies that the parking space has to be within the residential structure. And is that what we want? Because in other apartment conditions, they have exterior garages. We've allowed that to be the, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think we need to dictate that they would be basically attached garages. Again, the market would dictate if people are more likely to rent a facility that has an attached garage, they would provide that facility. But if sometimes the site may not make sense to have that, I don't know that we need to necessarily dictate that unless that's an aesthetic thing that we want to make sure we have.
I think it's fine to leave it open. I mean, the development that went in to replace the hillside, you know, I mean, they have a whole string of garages that are separate, and if we were to impose on them under the same structure, then they'd be looking at something underground, and all of a sudden it's no feasible, you know, it's not economically feasible for a developer to move forward with projects on some parcels. So I think, what'd you say, Roger? Let the market determine what the developer wants to ask for.
Can I just think about that? I mean, just add this. If they only have one, let's say maybe the market would dictate that you need two, aren't you going to start ending up with a lot of parking on the streets or in places where you don't really want the parking?
I don't know.
Street parking can count.
Yeah.
No, but if people have two cars and there's only one place for each apartment, where are they going to go? They're going to go on the street.
A different apartment. I think that's what we're saying, is that they won't rent an apartment there. So the person who wants to build an apartment complex is going to say, the code only requires one, but I'm going to provide two because I know I have a better chance of renting out my units.
I understand that, but I don't
think
that's good work.
I think you might be thinking of what happened on the Hilltop Apartments. I don't know, but just for reference, when we were going through that site plan review process, there were a lot of residents that live on Somerset and Hilltop that were concerned that the new apartment would allow for parking on the street, and that the former apartment, it had become a nuisance.
So actually, one of the things I was thinking is, could we put 1.5, so that you got half of them get two spots, or, you know, I mean, is there something we can do like that? Because I see people not thinking about that when they rent the apartment. Are they told? Are they assigned spots? They aren't. So how do you know which spots go with your apartment?
Well, if it's covered, you are. But
if they're not,
covered.
Where do they go? Someone's going to end up on the street.
This may be no. We don't permit parking on streets from November to February or March, whatever it is. So.
And two, another possibility could be it'd be a public works issue. And, they strike me for year-round no parking.
Right. I personally don't see a problem with overnight street parking. I don't. You know, except for when you have to clean the streets or plow the streets. So, but otherwise, so people park overnight on the street in my neighborhood all the time when it's permitted. So, I don't know that it's an issue that we should be concerned with.
I think the density makes it different than housing. The density of the apartment building.
There's still only a certain amount of curb space, though. Right.
Yeah. So. I don't know if it's certainly not something that's hanging out there,
right.
Potentially causing us an issue. So,
and high density, we currently don't. We have apartments.
But that's
but
that's one reason I think we need to get a consultant to look at our zoning code again
mm-hmm.
and properly advise us on these issues. Because so, we're guessing otherwise. So it's just based on what we feel about.
Other communities do have the 1.5.
So there's such a thing.
Right. I mean, other communities also have one as well. Right? It's really what you believe is going to be best for Alloway.
We're just talking about covered, right?
No, I think either.
I think
it's a combination.
We would just take off that last sentence.
Remove the word covered or that phrase.
Mm-hmm.
So this parking count, is that only for resident parking? Does that refer just to the parking that's allowed for each resident, and then they have to provide some additional guest parking?
Yes.
And that's covered in the parking requirements for the
No, it's not. Under high density, it is. Under high rise, it's not. So, if you want, you can adopt very similar language and models.
Why don't we just go with 1.5 and take out the covered part, and then we'll have some extra spaces, no cover requirement.
It just
still
say.
Be developer friendly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Okay. If that's good with everybody else.
Yeah. No, I was gonna say that.
Okay. And then the last one is, again, pretty interesting. It's an instance that we probably won't see very much. There's half, for any public or semi-public buildings that exceed 75 feet, there needs to be an additional half foot or 2 feet of side yard setback. It's mentioned half foot in one part of our ordinances and 2 feet in another part.
How many buildings do you think we'd have that would be exceeding 75 feet? What's that like?
It
four stories?
Very many. I don't even know if our public works garage exceeds 75 feet.
No.
It'd be close.
I don't think so. Is there something?
So it's probably not a...
Well, what's every story is 10 feet, isn't it?
Yeah.
20.
Is it 20?
I don't know. Close to 20, I think.
I thought every story was 10 feet.
Yeah, 10 to 12.
Oh, it's 10 to 12, okay.
Yeah, so that'd be one of the taller buildings in Green Bay.
It's common.
Yeah.
I like the 2 feet.
Okay.
I'd vote for 2 feet.
I would too.
Just because of the perspective of being close to the lot line and seeing a taller building, you know, the visual view from the street or from the sidewalk or from the neighbor's backyard or whatever, wherever it is, I think it should be proportionally.
It just seems like a lot. So if you've got an 80-foot building, your side yard is 10 feet wider. For that 5 feet above 75, you've got 10 feet more on your yard. It just starts seeming like a really big yard to go.
You can quickly get to no building.
But maybe that's just the point, is to keep your buildings low.
You get a lot of buildings that are 74 feet.
Yeah, 74, yeah, and 3/4 feet.
And 3/4.
I don't know if the alloy really has a need to have buildings taller than that. So if it's that, to me, that's what that seems to be doing, is forcing buildings to be below that 75 foot.
That's what I was getting to.
So, and that's fine. Yeah. We may want to revisit that someday when we're about to build our first high rise.
Yeah, when Donald Trump comes to town, he wants to build that.
Tender Tower.
Yeah, Tender Tower. Better we start working on the funding now.
Well, if. Just to review, then we'll go with, on question number one, we'll go with first choice. Question number two, we'll go with the first choice. Question number three, we'll go with 1.5 with no cover. And then on question number four, we'll go with the first choice as well.
Okay.
Then moving on to the process, this will be filed in with and adopted by the Village Board with all the rest of the ordinances, so we won't be seeing this for quite some time.
You have this as an action item. Do you need a affirming vote?
I would like it, yes.
Okay. Can I get a motion for the changes that were made, or the how do you want us to word that? Revisions accepted.
Sure. That sounds great.
Okay.
So moved.
All right. Good. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay. Perfect.
Revisions are accepted, subject to the revision of the parking requirement on that one item.
As presented, except for the 1.5.
Yep. Okay. Perfect. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Okay.
That was Penny and Howard?
Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, moving on to item number 8, discussion of 2015 Plan Commission Annual Report.
I know last year we had talked about having some sort of metric as far as how many of our recommendations from the Planning Commission are then approved or adopted by the Village Board.
It's like they all were.
Right.
So that's good.
Exactly.
Yes.
So, okay, here we go.
Mm-hmm. in the assigned task. The major one is an agenda item tonight, and it will probably be a reoccurring agenda item for a little bit, is the excess, what to do with the excess landlord field tax. And then recommended initiatives, some that I see as pretty important, new ones at least, is under Parks and Recreation Committee. This will be addressed later on in the agenda, is identifying consistent wayfinding signs that match the park sales. And in the Public Works Committee, for instance, St. Joseph is tentatively scheduled to be reconstructed in 2018. That's a solid number, a date yet, but maybe that's a time period where we look at maybe implementing something like Arbor Rio Trail, or we look at the Webster St. Joseph intersection and use that as kind of a building block or a statement as far as what we want the rest of Webster to look like. And then under Planning Commission members, just a point to make sure you look at when you're up, when your term is up, and make sure you file with Debbie if you want to stay a member. Otherwise, are there any things that Planning Commission you'd like to see more of or see less of?
You mean in the report? Or
looking forward to the next year. Is there anything you want to address that I didn't include? Or is there something I left out that we covered last year, too?
Just kind of came across my mind that a couple years ago we were talking about updating our official map. And we kind of let that fall by the wayside. Maybe we should see if that's still needed.
I was just recently out at the Tom Lawrence's municipal building. It's such a really nice village or town map. It was so easy to read. Really highlighted a lot of good stuff. And the cars is cumbersome.
Agreed.
And I think it should be redone. I thought of that too when I thought of last week. Like, why do the cars look so nice?
We could add that to our list of tax money, usage of tax money. Add it to the list.
Executive's office is doing, it's called NUI, and that is going to give us an opportunity to, we can stream our commission meetings, but two, also put together public service announcements, better educate the public on a lot of different spectrums, and create little commercials. There's 10 professional commercials that they'll help us. Commercials to help us to produce, and that we can do as many little like 30-second segments as many as we want. So this will be a nice opportunity coming down the pipe as far as getting the word out as far as what we want to accomplish, what we're trying to accomplish, and seeking that public input. So it should be important for reaching the public.
I think these are all good tasks for 2016. It seems to fall in line with what we want to do strategically with the zoning ordinance and the corridor study and matching that up with the street program. You know, a couple of these, if we were to make headway, would be really significant. So, I think the path is good that you've laid out for 2016. We'll see if we follow.
People have so many other exciting things to do. A lot of time.
Yeah, there's always those things called regular business that take up the time.
So I was anticipating actually more comments. So I'll enlist this as a discussion item, so I'll have to come back next month to be voted on.
And that's fine. I was going to maybe recommend if people wanted to take these home and to add anything, we could.
Yeah, think about it. Mm-hmm.
Okay, are there any comments? Okay, moving on to item number 9, discussion of sign code. This is pretty much the same memo that you had last time, right? You just added more communities to it?
That's correct.
Okay.
Is it going to be a secret what these communities are, or are we going to discuss it and then you're going to tell us? Because I really am dying to know who E is.
Okay.
And B.
Well, the
extremes.
The reason why I did that our teleconference last week was on sign codes, and they had a really neat statistic in there. And they said, based off of your ordinance, however it handles existing non-conforming uses, if you have an ordinance like ours that only forces a sign to change when you change the size or shape, it takes about 40 years for 90% turnaround of those signs. If you have a more restrictive one, such as any time something that even the face has changed, you have to conform with the ordinance. It takes about 15 years to bring 90% to turn. So I think a lot of communities have good ordinances, but they go with the less restrictive non-conforming use policy, which is understandable because that obviously is a high value impact to a business owner. They have to replace it if they just want to replace the sign. So a lot of communities have good sign codes, but you might not see it driving through the communities. So the reason why I did a blind test like this is so there weren't any prejudgments.
Because the community that has the 80 square foot per side limit, you might not see that because they're maybe not forcing people to upgrade their sign.
Right.
That's probably the point.
So I can bring it up on the computer.
Is the height of ours an issue at all? The 8 foot? Because I like the lower signs, but I'm wondering if that's...
I don't think it's a big issue. I think as you increase the size, you don't want to get too wide. So you might want to increase a little higher, but not too much. So B is Germantown, which was what I presented last time. And E looks like it's the pier, Main Street.
Yeah.
But then you have the Pier Main Street, and you have the Pier, their 41 Business District.
And
so
they're
getting closer to 41. And so, and again, you have, as you mentioned last time, Penny, different areas of the village. You might, you like, along Riverside, you might be a little more flexible, or
because people are traveling faster now.
Right. I also have the reader or the electronic message centers on there. We currently do not have any restriction on how big something can be. So you have a 32 square foot sign that's called electronic message center. It's pretty great.
That's very expensive, though, isn't it? I mean, when you get bigger and bigger, it's going to be more expensive. Oh. So it kind of restricts itself in a way, but I think...
It might be the low-hanging fruit.
That might be something we could really change.
So looking at these, obviously I won't ask you to take action tonight, but I did make a few recommendations. Here in yellow, and I included what businesses we have in Alloway or what buildings in Alloway. I'm sorry if you can't read it. So 1 to 2 tenant signs, that's the majority of our signs in Alloway. That's even large buildings like Prevea or HME or Webster Avenue Market. When you go to 3 or more tenants, they're at less than 25,000 square feet. That's something like as Brzezinski's is at. So that then I'm asking to jump up from 32 to 48 square feet per side with a 10 foot height restriction. And again, these are just...
When you say 10 feet, that's the vertical height?
Correct,
yes. Of the sign?
When they have what about now at Jesse's, isn't that higher than 8 feet?
Oh, it's...
It's like 30 feet?
Yeah.
So
that's old.
Is that the vertical of the sign area? That's the dimension? Or is that the height off of the ground?
That'd be the ground to the... Even if they had a decoration on top, that'd be the top of the decoration. Then you get to 3+ tenants. Ability is 25 to 50 square feet. And these are just rough estimates that I got from using Brown County maps as far as square footage. But you have something like Eves up here, Gallagher's, Village Shops on Hoffman and East River, the CP Center. That would stick within the same 48 square feet per side.
This is only freestanding.
This would be monument size.
Okay, so anything on their building obviously could be up higher.
The building that Eves was in, they just replaced their sign on Riverside.
Correct. I
thought it looked pretty. It's an ugly sign, but I thought the size looked pretty good.
Yeah.
The size of the sign.
They kept the size and shape, so then there again is the existing
So wait, they replaced the whole thing, but they were still, because they didn't change the shape of it,
right,
they weren't required to follow the ordinance.
Right, this is the same reason how Schrader's, they replaced their message board, because they maintained the size and shape.
You never get conforming then.
So that might be something we want to look into as well, is maybe in more strict language.
It's interesting because I put down my suggestions and I gave them 2 more feet than you did.
Okay.
50 and 50 and then 60.
And those were just kind of, I was thinking like 5 by 12.
I didn't really think out why I thought that. I just...
I spoke with a few sign companies around the area, and they said you really don't need to be any taller than 14 feet.
Well, the thing is, we don't have any big highways.
Right.
We don't have 6-lane roads, 45 miles an hour traffic, like some suburbs do, and that's one reason West Allis has, I mean, they've got huge stores in their community. But, you know, we've got this ideal of low-scale development, and it would seem we'd want to keep our signs down, too. We wouldn't want, you know, requiring buildings to be low-profile, but then we allow these signs to stick way up. Doesn't seem consistent.
Right.
So,
Yeah, I have to say, when I was sketching in my numbers, I gave them no more height.
Okay.
But some of those, like a 60-foot sign might need a little bit more height, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I might have to rethink my thought process on that, too. But I certainly don't want them high.
For an example, this is 8 feet tall, but 72 square feet. This is 8 feet tall by 48 square feet.
So 48 is a kind of common size?
Correct.
Just because it can be divided nicely?
Mm-hmm. And then you have the big one. I don't think we really need something like that, but just for a point of reference. And obviously it looks big now, but even driving at 30 miles per hour past the sign, you have limited time to read what it says. Our wayfinding signs, that's what I'm finding out as we're researching them more and more, is they're actually, you think you have a nice size, but you should go a little bigger.
Because you're finding your way.
I often find what's missing on monument signs is the building number. Even though there might be multiple addresses in a multi-tenant situation, you know, seeing some number on that monument sign would help people find what they're looking for, even if they don't see the...
like a block number or something.
Something.
Almost.
Yeah, I think I agree. That's a lot of signs are missing that. The addresses.
So again, this is discussion item. If you guys want to talk about it more tonight, that's fine. Otherwise, I can bring it back.
Can you scroll down? What's your recommendation for the electronic message?
I can send this to you as well. But I was thinking anywhere from, I like the one-third of the sign or 33%, anywhere from there to 40%, I don't really think. To put in reference, the largest sign that I would recommend going with, and we could even go to the largest sign, be 60, that's fine, but we don't really have too many of this size building in LA, or too many locations for that type of size building anymore. 40% of 72, I think I calculated out to about 28 and a half feet, something like that. So it's still smaller than what we require.
I'm trying to remember, Trevor, is there a standing sign where the Labor Ready building is now that Quick Trip's going to be going into? Is there a sign there? I thought there was one on the building, but is there one on the road?
I don't believe so.
Okay. Because those are the situations that we're going to run into in the future, is the redevelopment, like as Estes or, if there's already that freestanding side of the Eaves building. Is how do we incite them to spend the money to upgrade to our ordinance? It's got to be a small business loan.
Another good thing is we have the facade improvement program.
Exactly. That's
great.
Yeah. So I think we want to get...
district, though.
No, I think... Isn't that village-wide?
Yeah.
That was one of the suggestions that I threw out as far as the sales tax money.
Yeah, we could talk about that.
The facade aspect for those as well. For businesses outside the gym.
So what I can do is I can go ahead and send this to you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Think it over the next month. I'll make a note about what was I just gonna make a note for?
Addresses.
Will this then go to economic development?
I will present economic development with
in February.
Yeah, task there as well.
It's a good idea. Moving on to sign night. Ten is discussion of wayfinding signs. Do you have some to show us?
Yeah. So what I was just going to show you is for a quarter study, Grief identified some key locations to consider within their study area of putting in wayfinding signs. They more or less describe a specific kind of larger area, and then it would be up to Public Works to kind of determine where exactly the safest and most effective places within that area the signs should go. But having this discussion with our Parks Director, Chris Clark, they're actually looking at, over the next 10 years or more, phasing out their signs to something a little more to-date, upscale maybe. And we had talked that we want to keep a consistent theme within the village, just kind of throughout the vision and sessions, we kept hearing this kind of this historic residential feel. European Hamlet got thrown out quite a few times. So when Chris is doing these signs and we're talking about wayfinding signs or potentially gateway signs, keeping a theme that when people drive through Alloway, they know that they're in Alloway. And so what we did was we reached out to a few of the sign companies and asked them for some design recommendations. But we also reached out to UWGB and NWTC to see if maybe their students could design something creative. And NWTC, the timeline just didn't work out. UWGB, it actually worked out perfectly. Where one of their design classes wants to take on the project, and at the end of the day, we might not use their design because then we also have to have a sign company fabricated and everything. But they are interested in this. This is actually part of their curriculum, their normal curriculum, and so they, based off the information Chris and I have given them, kind of what we've observed over those visioning sessions, the European Hamlet, the kind of historic residential character, they're going to take that and they're going to kind of come up with three concepts, just preliminary concepts, and they want to present it to you guys at the February meeting. And from there, they get your input and regroup and potentially come back in either April to the Plan Commission or in May for the Village Board and kind of present their final proposal. We're kind of looking at May or June anyway, as far as having a solid design process down, or a solid sign theme selected, so that Chris could start implementing some of the signs this summer.
Let's do it. Yeah.
So I just want to give you a heads up that that's who's going to be at the next meeting.
Okay. Good. Item number 11, discussion of recommendations for use of refund for excess Lambeau Field sales tax. Make a decision yet?
Oh, no. Right now what we have is it's going to be a standing agenda item on the second meeting of every month of the Village Board for a while so that we can continuously gather some input. But still would love to hear any additional thoughts from the Plan Commission. Hopefully this is the most updated list. It's been condensed a little bit because some of them are duplicates or very close to another idea. So we don't want to eliminate anyone's ideas at this point. It's still in the gathering process. And we're trying to get the best bang for the buck. If that is totally using it for debt reduction, then that's what it will turn out to be. We want to make sure that we're exploring every opportunity.
Have you had finance take a look at what that would actually mean as far as property tax relief? Is that really just a...
Yes, in a couple different methods.
it's in there now. The numbers are
right
on the document now.
Seriously?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I saw him in a different one.
Yeah, you saw him in a different one than I think I threw out at one point. But one of the things that's helpful for us is we finally have a CIP plan. And so, you know, when you start to forecast out 5, 10, 15 years, and you're starting to see where that next borrowing might be, you have to keep that in mind if you're doing your debt reduction. You know, if it's depending on when the time frame is and you're able to reduce the debt, but yet in the next year you're borrowing again, are you really getting the best bang for the buck? So that's what we really want to explore totally.
Yeah, there was a $4 million GO bond obligation on the TIF plan that Eric presented to us?
Yes.
So, okay.
So again, this is more or less, continue to think about it, please, and you can email me your ideas. I'm taking any and every idea that's out there, and what we'll eventually do is sit down and go through each idea and give it what are the benefits of it.
Even have do nothing at the moment, save all or part of the money for the future.
Looking at interest.
Yeah. So you could have an arbitrage problem possibly, but yeah.
Is there any obligation to use the funds? Do you have any stipulations on how long you can hold on to it?
There is no sunset clause to it. And I think the intent of it, you know, bringing it down into three categories, wanted to give municipalities as much creativity as they certainly can come up with.
And this is really flexible too, right? You actually receive the funds before
Correct.
The project is... Do you have to have a project in place to receive the funds? Or do they just give you the money?
In order to expend any money, it needs to go through a resolution.
Okay.
And that is sent to Department of Revenue.
And then they transfer the money. Okay.
No, but they've already sent us the money.
They did.
The check
yes.
out there?
Oh, okay.
That was a big check.
There is okay. a separate account established to put the funds in.
So you're sure. earning interest right now?
Should be.
0.01%.
0.001%.
You get more if you've got a big
okay,
budget.
Yeah, we're in no hurry. We want to make sure that whatever the funds is used for, the only commitment right now that the board has really looked at was funding the new IV for at least 1 year. And that's the program that I was discussing a little bit ago, where we're streaming our board meetings and stuff.
Well, again, the issue is on the, you know, if it's not for debt reduction, if it's not for property tax relief, we have to justify how something is economic development.
Correct.
So, and I think as a board, as a commission, we should probably come up with some ideas with justifications that we believe.
You know, and again, like I said, when I thought about, and I've added it to the list, where creating a facade program for those that are outside the TIF district. Okay, so if a business does invest in a new sign, does that increase the value of their property? Most likely not, but it does bring them into compliance, so that you know, you do have a trade-off there as well. Some facade improvements are definitely an increase in your value, but is it, you know, an extreme amount? Probably not. But again, so you just weigh those all out. But it does give flexibility to, or opens up another avenue to help with the non-compliance and gives those business owners an opportunity.
Any chance of partnering with the Green Bay Correctional Institution to fix their wall so that it's a little more attractive looking. I mean, that's an entrance to the village. 172, we're talking about wayfinding signs and identifying alleyway things, and what you see is this big brown wall that's where all of the EPIS or whatever it is that was sprayed on there is coming off. So
one of the things that they looked at is painting a mural on there.
Yep.
But based on the materials that are on that wall, they felt that it was probably not a good idea.
Yeah, I can believe that. The murals that I saw in Seward, Alaska, which had a million of them, they were all separate, and then they were anchored to their walls. They weren't actually painted on the walls. They were, you know, attached to the wall. The other thing I thought of was that what's it called? The pump house, the one that we own, that's on Green Avenue. Last time I looked in there, it was full of junk, and you know, some investment. I mean, you know, that's village-owned property, right?
Correct.
So some investment to clean that up and make it and remove that holding tank in the back and make it a little more appealing to someone who might want to purchase that building, because now I would assume that the cost is prohibitive for someone wanting to that size building. And you know, some, I don't know, it just seems like we ought to be able to do something to help facilitate the sale of that property and help that neighborhood.
In the last week, I've sent out 2 packets on that building.
Oh, okay, so, then.
You know, hopefully one of them will take an interest.
We'll just kind of hold my thought for later, then. Maybe you won't need to.
It's such a unique building. It would be nice to see it utilized.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Any more on the last person that was looking at it? Or there was one of the packets? It's 2 different.
These are 2 different.
Okay.
I haven't heard anything in either. Several months.
What was the final dollar amount that the village owe again?
We should be receiving a total of $719.
Okay.
The check we've received so far is $706, I believe, or $704.
Okay.
They were holding some back because there were still some closing out the year in.
Sure.
I think this is certainly an item that could sit on the Planning Commission agenda for a while.
Oh, eventually, though, you got to break it down to 3, and then 2, and then 1.
Yes.
And then do something. So.
Well, there could be a matrix of uses. So.
Yeah, we'll have to break this down into some other type of formats to get through all the public hearings and everything you're doing on the village board layer.
Right. We've only had 1 official public information meeting on it.
Sure.
Which, you know, we had several people come in and speak, so. Not as many as I'd like, but we still had a good share.
If there's another discussion, move on to item number 12, update on bicycle and pedestrian plans. I guess Roger. Unless Roger's got anything extra about what's going on there, or anybody else? Okay. Sounds like it's moving forward.
Well, I'll just mention real quick. We did have a very awesome response from our survey. We had 393 respondents, which for a community our size is phenomenal. Our Parks and Rec survey that we did earlier last year at 99 response, that's about typical of our community size.
Awesome.
What did we do differently to get more response?
Well, I had advertised to Bellum and Prevail.
Okay.
So we actually had 46% of our respondents aren't Alloway residents, but they use our facilities. Also, the demographics match up with what our demographics are in the village. So while they're not residents, they're likely to have similar interests, possibly.
That's great.
Are you statistically significant?
Yeah. Statisticians normally have problems with these types of surveys.
Yeah. Got to see your regression, your R-squared. Okay. To building permit report. I don't think there's anything we really need to discuss here, but thank you for providing this. I know I've asked in the past, and it's a good thing to see.
And can you keep doing it at like another 6 months?
Yeah. Maybe call out any major upticks in any activity that's going on is a big deal. You know, so
I think the point of this is to give us a sense of the character and quality of development occurring in the village that we're not aware of, because permits are issued that we never really see what's going on with them because they're all within,
right,
you know, the codes. But so for us, and we aren't able to get around to the whole village, so it'd be nice to have a sense, maybe even some photographs of some of the nicer projects or, you know, something
yeah,
like that.
So. Absolutely, and along with that, if there's, do you put dollar amounts, the cost of the project on the permit? Does that go on the permit? Application?
Yes, yes, yes.
Because that's a big deal. I mean, that shows there's a dollar investment back into the community. And you hopefully see that increase year over year. Okay, if there's nothing else, let's wrap it up. You good?
I noticed there were a couple of demolition permits that are active. Anything we need to know about, or do we already know it? Maybe it doesn't matter.
I think the one was.
Yeah, I don't know if Kevin just didn't move on from active to.
Oh.
Which archive?
So maybe it's old business.
Yeah, because those are the only two that I can think of. The one on Riverside Drive.
Yep.
And one on Webster and Derby.
Yeah, okay. No, I just, in case there was something new. Building disappeared that we haven't seen.
I'll look into that.
Yeah, well, it's no big deal.
I just think you're asking.
Yeah. Here's a question. Has anybody, has there been any activity with the CDBG block grant home redevelopment or home assistance stuff?
That might be something we should discuss, how to advertise that, because talking with Brown County who distributes those funds.
Well, and the other thing is, if our code inspector, whoever goes around the village, you know, does he have any sense of buildings that probably could benefit from?
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
So.
When does that community development block grant end? Are we in the middle of an application period right now, or is that?
I think it's rolling.
I think it is
rolling. Okay. Great. If there's nothing else, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So move.
We got a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We are adjourned. Thank you.